Okay, our next session is with Roman Shapochnik. So it's this HPC, big data, and data science.
Yes, well, it's the talk about MATLAB, but before I actually do the talk, I wanted to do a shameless plug, you know, promotion of the FOSDEM conference. So FOSDEM is the biggest open source conference that's in Brussels, and this is the second year that we're going to have a big data, HPC, and data science dev room. So I really would welcome all of you to submit the talk proposals. So the deadline for that is at the end of the month. And just go to this, you know, like Google the URL, you know, or sort of FOSDEM 2017 HPC Big Data, you will see where to submit your talks. And we have a few flyers, you know, if you want to take them home and, you know, give to your friends. So really looking forward to seeing at least some of you at FOSDEM. So with that, let's actually get to the talk. So how many of you are familiar with this quote that software is eating the world? All right, well, at least a couple of hands. So it is true in a way. I mean, we're all seeing, you know, businesses being redefined and, you know, sort of companies getting more and more into the software game. But I think we need to update the statement to basically say this nowadays. So that was back in 2011, and that was true. But in November 2016, I think what we really need to be saying is that machine learning is eating the world, right? And yes, software is doing machine learning, but that's what the objective is. And of course, Google being all-knowing, you know, the easiest way to see whether it's software or machine learning is to compare Google Trends. So if you, you know, look at this, right at around, you know, somewhere beginning 2016, machine learning, you know, surpassed software, so I guess it is machine learning. It is definitely going mainstream, but what does going mainstream really mean? Well, I think it actually means that the enterprises, not just, you know, researchers or companies like Facebook, but the God-honest enterprises, you know, the companies like General Electric and, you know, Ford Motor Company and Bosch, and all of these, like, big household names, are now embracing machine learning, and they're actually doing it in an interesting way. And that's what I'm here to talk about. We all, you know, especially at ApacheCon, recognize the power of big data ecosystem, right? You know, Hadoop ecosystem is how we do machine learning, or maybe you're doing Spark, I mean, it's sort of the same. But all of that is actually predicated on having your data exist in this data lake environment that enterprises don't really have, right? You know, most of the data in the enterprise is actually locked in SQL databases. And SQL is all they're familiar with. The tools they're using are predominantly SQL. You know, they're doing their visualizations, you know, using Tableau or some other SQL tool. So the whole idea behind Hadoop was to bring computation to where the data is, right? And in Hadoop's case, that's HDFS, you know, distributed file system. But if the data is already in a SQL database, what do you do? Well, the answer to that question is Apache Medlib, which is still an incubating project. I will be talking about it today. It is a distributed and database machine learning system, and it is kind of trying to get the same idea of bringing computation to the data, but in a SQL sense, right? This is just a screenshot of the Medlib's website. You can go to, you know, medlib.incubator.apache.org to find out more. But the basics of it is, you know, we implement a bunch of functions, and those are, you know, your normal sort of, you know, data science, bread and butter, you know, stuff, like linear regressions, you know, stuff like that, machine learning, you know, stat utilities. There's, you know, some rudimentary time series implementation as well, but time series is probably where Medlib is the weakest. Things like, you know, graph analytics on SQL databases are actually coming, and if you're interested in that, that would be one of the easiest areas to contribute to, because after all, it is an Apache project. So in terms of the features, you know, what do you get out of Medlib? Well, you know, you get better parallelism, because if you're already dealing with, you know, a SQL-based MPP system, you know, something like Medlib would allow you to parallelize your computation. And I will talk about engines on which Medlib runs a little bit later. It is an open source project, right? You know, so those things that I'm listing today is what sort of the existing community is proud of, but I think the pitch that I'm making is join the community and, you know, let's add to this list. So before I actually go on explaining, you know, the details of Madlib implementation, let's actually kind of take a trip down the memory lane and appreciate where Madlib actually came from, right? So it all started way back in 86, and I'm not that old. I'm old, but not that old, you know, to remember. Way back when, you know, Michael Stonebreaker in Berkeley came up with this idea of the new database, Postgres database. Actually, it's kind of funny, but when he came up with the Postgres, it wasn't really even clear that relational databases were a done deal. Like, there was a battle in the database community, whether it's relational databases or object databases. So Postgres was meant to be this really flexible implementation that would have any kind of front ends. And SQL as a standard didn't really fully exist yet, so it was trying to adapt, you know, to the standard. And then, you know, of course, you basically had this proliferation of Postgres releases. So Postgres became one of the two sort of most used databases in the open source community, you know, the other one obviously being SQL, MySQL. But now I actually would say that after Sun's, complete meltdown and, you know, Oracle buying the company, I think, you know, Postgres is now the only game in town when it comes to open source databases. I mean, MariaDB can sort of, you know, potentially salvage some of the MySQL constituency, but today Postgres is a really common open source database in all of the enterprises. And I guess what I'm trying to say is because of the legacy and because of where Postgres is today, of course, in all of the enterprises, you will find Oracle database, but the other database that you would typically find would be Postgres database. And if you're a data scientist, you know, who is joining one of those enterprises, of course, you can join and say, like, well, let's do a huge ETL and, you know, extract all of the data into HDFS or, you know, some other place. But it's actually much nicer to do analytics on top of the database that you already have. What's interesting is, you know, right around when Postgres 8 got released, a company called Greenplum basically forked it off and created an MPP, massively, you know, parallel processing type of a database, where it basically was Postgres, you know, on different nodes, so sharded tables, you know, sharding is done per key. And, you know, your queries can be executed on multiple nodes at once, so you don't actually have to care too much about where, sort of, how to distribute it. All you do is, you know, you do a SQL, just a standard SQL query, and all of the data from all of the nodes, you know, get sort of pooled into that same query. It's a somewhat alternative architecture to what Hadoop is doing, but the idea of Madlib was actually like right around the same time that Hadoop got released, you know, Hadoop sort of 1.0 got released. I mean, Hadoop itself, of course, started much earlier than that. But 1.0 got released at around, you know, 2010, 2011. And Madlib was launched at the same time, kind of sort of also capitalizing on the idea that you're bringing computation to the data. And since then, we basically open sourced Greenplum. So just like I'm saying that Postgres today is one of the probably the game in town when it comes to relational databases, open source relational databases. I think it would be fair to say that Greenplum is the only game in town when it comes to open source MPP type of databases. And it's also derived from Postgres, so it basically shares all of the Postgres implementation details. If you're interested in Greenplum, tomorrow will be a talk specifically dedicated to it, but let's go on with Madlib. So history is, you know, mostly academic. So Madlib was an open source project to begin with. So you will see a couple of, you know, projects that Pivotal, the company I work for, brought into the open source, you know, and they used to be closed sourced, and then we put them into the Apache Software Foundation. Madlib actually isn't one of those. It was open source to begin with, and it actually came out of University of Berkeley. Not surprising, because, you know, Postgres also came out of the same institution, but with a few other universities contributing as well. So if you're looking into contributions, Berkeley is probably number one, Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin is probably number two, and Stanford is number three, then also University of Florida. Madlib, just like anything that comes out of Berkeley, was originally available under BSD license, which is, you know, really very permissive license. Now that's actually moved into Apache, we have an interesting challenge. So 90% of the Madlib code is under the BSD license, and we kind of have to also dual license it under the Apache license, which is totally permissible, it's just a little bit confusing. In terms of the name, I mean, it's just a cool name, right? But the backronym is basically Magnetic, Agile, and Deep, and, you know, take what you will from that. In terms of the engines, anything that you do with Madlib can run on all of the derivatives of Postgres, including Postgres itself. So basically, if you do a machine learning implementation and you have a couple of Madlib calls, and I will show you how they look, you can run it on either of those databases, and theoretically, you can run it on anything that would support those type of user-defined functions that Madlib depends on. So there was, for example, an intern project to run Madlib on Apache Impala, the project out of Cloudera, and it was reasonably successful. I think they decided not to pursue it as, one of the features that Impala supports, but it just was a showcase that it's pretty easy to port Madlib to any kind of SQL databases, And Impala, of course, has nothing to do with Postgres, so it was a brand new implementation. So that was a pretty useful exercise. In terms of the scalability, this bread and butter test performance benchmark for anything, in machine learning, of course, has to start with linear regression. So as you can see, linear regression in Madlib scales pretty much linearly, So here we're running it on Greenplum database and Hawk. You can run it obviously on Postgres too, but Postgres, you cannot really add nodes. So it's kind of pointless to basically talk about scalability that way. Just to give you a taste, here's logistic regression scalability, here's SVM scalability. So it's, all pretty linear. That's all you have to take away from these slides. But in terms of usage, here's how you would use Madlib. It's basically a library that exists within the SQL ecosystem, right? And within the SQL ecosystem, you assume that all of your data exists either as a SQL table or as a view, right? Basically anything in your data store, typically you would call it a logical data warehouse, is one or the other. And in that sense, Madlib basically allows you to have these functions, that all start with the Madlib prefix. So in this particular case, if we're interested in training a model, so just to give you, some information on what I'm doing here, right? We're training a model that would be capable of predicting the price of a house, right? Based on the zip code, the area where the house is located, the number of bedrooms, stuff like that, right? So we have an existing, set of houses, in a table somewhere, or maybe it's a view. And then we're just basically giving that table to the Madlib function. We're also giving a table that will be the output, sort of essentially the store for the model itself, right? That's the houses out. We're essentially giving it the variable on which to predict, so we're trying to predict the price. And we're also communicating to Madlib the features in the data set that it will be using to do the linear regressions on, right? So we're using text, number of bathroom, and size of the house as something that Madlib would be training its model on. Basically, once the model gets trained and output into this table called houses out, we can access it right here to predict, the price of a house that is coming in. Pretty, simple bread and butter SQL calls, right? But of course, how does it get implemented is an interesting question. So the execution flow in Madlib is as follows. So you basically have your typical SQL client. And what's interesting is, again, because it's SQL, you get the support of anything that talks SQL. And that's the biggest ecosystem of projects today, right? If you're talking Apache, you get Apache Zeppelin. The previous talk was about Zeppelin, so some of you probably should sort of get a rough idea of what it is. But you also get your Jupyter notebooks. You can use pgAdmin. You can use Tableau. Anything that speaks SQL would be just fine. So then you typically have a database server, and that's a thing that parses your SQL request, right? And then you have a bunch of stored procedures that master, pushes into the segments if you're running an MPP type of architecture. Then segments, it's essentially a MapReduce model, but done within the sort of confines of a traditional SQL engine, right? Then the segments basically do their bit. They compute the sort of whatever they need to compute based on the local state. They exchange information with the master, so that's kind of like a shuffle phase, and you get your result back. So just very quickly, what would you sort of fit into this type of an execution model? Well, linear regression, as we already saw, is a pretty popular example, and it's actually very indicative of what you would do as a data scientist if you're trying to add additional capabilities to Matlab. So linear regression, as we all know, is all about just, you know, linear algebra, so you're essentially trying to solve for this. And if you're assuming a SQL model, you basically have your matrix essentially as a table in a SQL database, right? So each row belongs to a certain segment, and, you know, a subset of rows would be residing on one machine, you know, another subset of rows will be residing on a different machine. So how do you do this? Well, you basically have to get a little bit tricky, because operations across segments increases network traffic. So if you do it in a simple-minded way, you would basically end up with a lot of, you know, cross-node talk all the time, so you actually do it in this way. You try to decompose, and once you do, you essentially end up with this, which gets you to this picture where you're essentially trying to operate on subsets of this table that belong to the same node in the system. And you're trying to basically do the sort of this parallel computation, you know, here. You're trying to do the parallel computation here. But of course, you then have to combine the results of these computations, and that's where the master comes in, right? So it's a little bit tricky, but that's what you have to do to kind of decompose the traditional linear algebra operations on matrices into essentially as much, you know, embarrassing parallelism as you possibly can get out of it. And a lot of stuff in Matlab is implemented in this particular way. And, you know, this is how you sort of from, again, you know, those of you sort of with interest in algebra, I mean, that's how you do the composition phase. But we're actually sort of running a little bit out of time, so I won't be spending too much time here. The slides will be available after the presentation, so if you want to, you know, kind of have a explanation of what Matlab is doing, this is a good slide to have in front of you. Now, this is an example of something that doesn't require you to do any kind of iterations or convergence, right? You know, once you're computing this, once you have computed this, you know, matrix product, you're kind of done, right? You know, you basically found your solution. A lot of times, you actually need to converge on a model, and I will give you an example. So the way it's being done in Matlab is sort of the other Matlab capability. So you basically have a master that essentially operating in this model where it's trying to broadcast computation to the segments, right? And the segments themselves, you know, try to compute a function based either on batches or mini batches. You know, those who are familiar with Spark would recognize this. Then the result of those mini batch gets transferred back to master. And the master is running some kind of a final function on it, right? You know, trying to determine whether the model has converged or not. And if it hasn't, this same iteration repeats all over again. So where do you see it? Well, typical example is basically k-means clustering. You know, one of the sort of most common ways of doing it is essentially starting with a point that's closest, you know, to some of the dots, right? And then readjusting it based on how close it actually ended up doing. It ended up being. So if we start with a data set like this, right, and we pick points like this, you know, then we would basically connect them to the closest neighbors. But after we've done that, we actually would have to readjust it based on how close it ended up being. So we would then reconnect here, and we would reconnect here. But my point is that you would have to iterate and recompute without realizing how many steps it would take up front, right? So that's why you need this function on a master that is trying to track how close you are to a final solution and would only exit once you're actually close enough to the final solution, which in our case would be something like, I guess, here, converge. So that's the two types of algorithms that you would see implemented in Matlab, right? One is linear algebra, just optimized for massively parallel computations. The other one is basically convergence-based. There is not really anything in between, although, like I said, graph computations based on adjacency matrices, you know, being represented as tables is also coming into Matlab, so that presents some interesting, tricky computer science problems. So hopefully by now, you know, you should realize the overall architecture, but I will repeat it again. So obviously there is a SQL bit. Then at the high level iteration layer, you know, you would define something like a Python function, and it can actually be anything that the Postgres implementation has a PL extension for. So we prefer Python, but you know, if you're like into PL Java, you can actually do PL Java, that's fine too. And that's again where the power of Postgres comes in, because Postgres has been extended to support pretty much anything that you could possibly think of. Then, you know, there's basically C++ layer. That is the user-defined function that gets distributed to all of the nodes, and that's the logic that runs on master and segments. And then there's basically a C API that is also, again, based on the Postgres API. So anything that can extend Postgres as a C library, you could actually recognize, you know, the same pattern. So anybody who's done Postgres would recognize what Matlib is doing. So I actually wanted to do a demo here, but we're running slightly behind. So let me just show you sort of how you would interact with Matlib as a data scientist. This is the Zeppelin screenshot, right? So with Zeppelin, you know, just like with Jupyter, actually maybe I even have a Jupyter demo that I can quickly show you. So you would basically have, you know, these notebooks that essentially would have sort of the SQL connections, right, and the SQL operations on whatever it is that you would like to do. Now, in Zeppelin's case, unlike with Jupyter, you can actually have multiple data sources, so it's actually easy to mix and match, you know, data coming from different places. So you can use Matlib and you can use Hive in the same notebook. Let me quickly see if I can actually show you the Jupyter one. Yeah, so the Jupyter is basically like the same idea. So, you know, oh yeah, so it's projecting now. So you would connect to a database, you know, you would basically sort of, you would load an extension, you would connect to a database. You know, here I'm just running a Matlib version selection, and for some reason, it doesn't really succeed, but the idea is that you would basically do all the usual SQL operations, right? So let me get back to the presentation. Now, you may say, but not all of the data scientists like SQL, and in fact, most of the data scientists, you know, don't really like SQL. So we have this, you know, impedance mismatch where BI people, they are all about SQL, right? So the guys who basically do reporting and, you know, analytics in a traditional way, they all just love SQL. But the new batch of scientists that are coming into the organization, they actually hate SQL. So they love statistics, you know, they love Spark, and they love R. So of course, you know, we basically had to implement R. So there is an implementation that connects R to the Matlib, and the way it does it is this, right? So if you happen to be a data scientist, you know, who loves R but hates Matlib, you can still leverage Matlib in a way that's very similar to what you would do with a SQL statement, but at least looks much more, you know, native to the R implementation. And the design is pretty simple. It's exactly what you would expect. So you have a client on which R is running. You don't actually have to make R distributed because that's the Matlib's concern. So on that client, you essentially have an R to SQL translation layer, right? You know, anything that you do in your R that has to query data in a database would actually be translated into SQL. You know, then you have a SQL to execute. And then, of course, you know, a whole bunch of mechanics, Matlib mechanics would happen, and the computation results will be sent back. Now, here's the point, right? The amount of results that are getting sent back has to be small enough. It's not like you can have a network traffic of, you know, huge data sets, you know, coming and going from your client. You know, for one thing, you would probably run out of memory on your client pretty quickly. So the idea here is to basically kind of like drive a remote Matlib execution through R, but only get the results back into R when you really need them, right? So if you computed a final value, you know, that's okay. But if you computed a bunch of, you know, data models in a table, like getting them all back to R would be silly. So a syntax is analogous to the native R function. So basically anything that you could, you know, implement that way, that's kind of where Matlib hooks in. Data, like I said, doesn't really need to leave the database. And in fact, if you want to make it leave the database, you know, that would be pointless. Out of the box, R extension in Matlib basically comes with the functions that support all of the implementations that Matlib provides, and that should be enough for you to get going. If you want something else, again, it's an open source Apache project, help us contribute. So just to give you a taste of what we've been working on so far, so here's like a bunch of functions that have been added in 2016. Madlib has been under the active development, you know, by the community of engineers at Pivotal. To tell you the truth, I mean, the contributions from Berkeley and Stanford kind of, you know, fizzled. So one of the things that we're looking for today at ApacheCon is, if you're interested in anything that I'm talking about, please join our community, because we would love to have you on board. It's no fun to have a community that's just, you know, like all the Pivotal people, although they are all really smart guys. You know, we really would love other organizations to benefit and participate as well. That actually goes back to planning the releases as well, right? One of the ways you could participate is not necessarily write code. I mean, if you would see that Madlib would be useful in your organization, you could at least, you know, get back to us on the mailing list, on the user mailing list, and kind of tell us what you would see Madlib being useful for, right? Because, you know, here's how we planned our release 1.10, but that's pretty much based on us talking to the customers that we have, you know, internally at Pivotal, because Pivotal as a company has a pretty big data science practice. You know, that's basically a bunch of data scientists that we kind of can loan, you know, to the clients of ours, and they can solve a particular data science challenge, and, you know, through solving that challenge, if there is something missing in Madlib, you know, that's how we come up with this list. But again, if you have, you know, other things that you would love to work on, please, please, please join us. So potential future features, I'm personally very excited about two things on this list. You know, graph analytics, obviously, because I'm sort of a giraffe guy myself, you know, Apache giraffe. But also the, But also the GPU support. So we actually had some pretty good discussions with NVIDIA people. Because Madlib happens to be C implementation, it actually is much easier in a way to hook it up to CUDA and, you know, those other libraries, because you basically get to exploit the interface right away without going through any sort of third-party library that would connect, you know, Java implementation to it. So, like I said, Madlib has had 3 Apache releases so far, and we are really looking forward to having some more. We're also hoping to graduate soon enough. So, what else? I think one of the things that we really have to do this year is to move the library to the top-level status. A couple of things is, you know, getting sort of more adoption, but also getting sort of more wide use of the Madlib itself in the companies like yours, and hooking it up to other Hadoop ecosystem projects would be a good way to do that. Maybe, you know, if you haven't heard, so how many of you do know about sort of SQL on Hadoop ecosystem? Oh, okay, a few. So let me talk a little bit about that then. So in Hadoop, when Hadoop started, I mean, it was all about sort of getting rid of traditional SQL interfaces altogether, writing your own MapReduce, you know, implementations of just about anything, right? And then, of course, the realization kicked in that, like I said, I mean, people really like their familiar SQL, you know, tools and familiar SQL practices. So a couple of projects, you know, Apache Hive probably was the first one. But then sort of Cloudera followed up with Impala. Pivotal followed up with a closed source tool called Hawk, which since then transitioned into the Apache Software Foundation. It's now called Apache Hawk. And it's sort of, imagine it as GreenPlum database without its own storage engine, right? You know, it's GreenPlum database that's running with the backend being Hadoop distributed file system, as opposed to just a bunch of disks that, you know, it can talk to. Between Hawk and GreenPlum database, you know, as an end user, as somebody who is working with Madlib, you wouldn't see much difference. But if you are interested in sort of joining the data sets that would be available in Hawk with the data sets that are sort of available in GreenPlum database, or maybe even in Postgres database, having the same machine learning layer, you know, like Madlib, would be reasonably helpful, right? Because what you don't want to have is you don't want to have, you know, some of your data science stuff implemented in MLlib, you know, some of your data science stuff implemented in, you know, Mahout, and some of it implemented in Madlib. So Madlib is also trying to get wide. So again, if you're interested in sort of porting it to other SQL engines, you know, that would be highly appreciated. So finally, you know, there's a bunch of resources, you know, there's a bunch of user docs that you could also contribute to. And we are really looking for basically, you know, it's an Apache project, right? So anything that you would see happening in Matlab would be managed on Jira. Going to Jira and seeing, you know, what's being done there, you know, is pretty much a good way to sort of get yourself familiar with, you know, the community. And there's basically, like, that's pretty much it. I mean, there are binaries that are available. So installing Matlab is actually pretty simple. I was running it on my laptop. The way you do it is, you know, you download Postgres. It's pretty simple. So this is macOS, so you would typically just do brew install. Then you download Matlab. So Matlab actually publishes convenience binary artifacts in its release. So you would basically just download Matlab, you know, install it on Postgres database, and then connect it to some kind of a SQL tool. I mean, PSQL is fine too, but, you know, you would probably use Jupyter or Zeppelin, you know, for any kind of real work. And you can actually start doing data science, you know, pretty quickly that way right away. So that's actually, so I've got 10 minutes, you know, left for questions. So any questions?
Probably it would be very naive.
Okay. Yep, it's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Probably it's going to be quite naive question, but in many enterprises you will find Oracle databases, mm-hmm. right? And question is, if you have any thoughts of running Matlab over Oracle databases, is it possible?
It theoretically may be possible. It's just sort of, let's take a step back and talk about Pivotal then, right? You know, so Pivotal as a company wants to be Red Hat of the cloud, right? So anything that we do has to be open source. It is absolutely possible for somebody who is interested to port Matlab, you know, to Oracle. It would be a reasonably sizable effort, but given the Impala exercise, where, again, it got ported to a completely new implementation that had nothing to do with Postgres, pretty much one intern doing it for 2 months, I would say that at least, you know, the basics should be easily portable, but it's not something that would ever come out of Pivotal because, again, like, we are not in business of promoting any kind of closer solutions. But if you're interested, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that would be a really valuable contribution.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. But again, having said that, so let me preface that. Having said that, I am myself a Postgres guy. Like, I actually know a fair bit about the internal implementation. I am absolutely not an Oracle guy. Like, I have no clue how the database is implemented. So if there is anything inherently, you know, like, impossible to overcome in the Oracle implementation, I doubt it. Again, like, Impala was that example that kind of, like, showed that it's pretty easy to do, but still could be cases where, you know, maybe Oracle has done something, like, completely, you know, obscure that you wouldn't be able to overcome it.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Someone else? Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Yep.